Baltimore found itself in the center of attention over the weekend as the President of the United States took to Twitter to condemn Baltimore Congressman Elijah Cummings and the district that he's represented for more than 20 years. It's not the first time that Cummings and Trump have clashed. Trump sued Cummings in April of this year, alleging that the Baltimore Democrat crossed a constitutional line with a subpoena to the president's longtime accountant, seeking years of financial statements. Trump, in tweets, has instructed Cummings to turn his focus back to his district, which, according to Trump, is rat and rodent infested, so bad that no human being wants to live there, and an overall mess. Cummings replied to the president, also on Twitter, that it's his congressional duty to look into the possible crimes of the executive branch. On today's episode, what merit is there to be found in Trump's and Cummings' arguments? And what has the federal government done or not done to help Baltimore through its darkest moments? With us today, first, is Baltimore Sun opinion editor Andy Green, who has some thoughts on what the White House can and should do to move the conversation forward. Later, we'll welcome Sun reporter Will Nobles to our sound studio to tell us what it was like to be in the newsroom on Saturday as a relative newcomer to the city that became objectified by the most powerful man in the world. Andy, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks. Glad to be here.
So, Andy, as the editorial board pointed out in the Saturday editorial, this fight developed as a reaction to Cummings' criticism over Trump's border policies and the president's treatment of the freshman congresswoman of color. And a critical segment that aired on Fox and Friends, which we know that Trump watches religiously. But the fight against Cummings goes back longer than these recent days. Mm-hmm. Can you explain why Congressman Cummings might pose a threat to the president?
It largely has to do with his position as the chairman of the House Government Oversight and Reform Committee. This is the principal committee that investigates possible wrongdoing or just other inefficiency or problems in the federal government. And under the Trump administration, Congressman Cummings has found a lot to do. You alluded to some of the things that he's been investigating earlier from Trump financial records. That's following up on some testimony that former Trump fixer Michael Cohen had given, suggesting that the President Trump, before he came into office, had violated or at least skirted very close to violating federal tax law in ways to benefit himself and his companies. He's investigated the border policies, you know, that right now in particular, Congressman Cummings had a really memorable exchange with officials from the Department of Homeland Security about the treatment of children at the border, about facilities where they're being held in some pretty horrible conditions in some cases. And, you know, generally, if you look at some of the things that critics of the Trump administration think are really ethical weak points, like, you know, potential emoluments clause violations in terms of how his business and government duties interact, Congressman Cummings is right in the center of that. And so he's driving a lot of the conversation, issuing subpoenas, trying to compel testimony from members of the administration. And so, you know, he could be a threat to the president in the sense of, you know, he's going to be the one who's digging up any dirt there is to dig up.
So Congressman Cummings has this powerful position leading this committee, investigating the president. The president has shown that he doesn't take kindly to criticism, I guess. So is what the president doing kind of a diversionary tactic here instead of going back at the committee and the committee's work that he did no wrong? He's instead pointing the finger at Cummings and Cummings' own district?
Yeah, I mean, it's certainly a classic Trump tactic that he's attacking the messenger and not the message, and changing the subject. You know, we're going from, talking about border policy to now a debate about whether there are rats in Baltimore. And for the record, there are rats in Baltimore, as there are in every major city the world over. And so, you know, it's a great distraction tactic. It also really riles people up around tension points on race and culture that tends to really excite his base and tends to really alienate liberals in particular and a lot of other people across the ideological spectrum in ways that just, you know, further puts him at the center of the conversation, puts him in the driver's seat of what we're talking about. And so to that extent, we'll see next year whether that ultimately is successful. But his bet is that as long as he is the ringmaster in the crazy circus of what's going on in his administration, then he's winning.
I guess better be on the offensive than on the defensive.
Yeah, that's certainly how he's played things thus far. And, you know, another reason I think that Elijah Cummings perhaps, you know, is someone that he's focused on more than a lot of other people is President Trump is very cognizant of how people look and play on TV, on cable news. Elijah Cummings, who has, you know, a great presence about him, you know, this sonorous voice, you know, sort of a preacher's cadence, can make for truly compelling TV. And that is something that Donald Trump is very respectful of in a way. You know, you see a lot of people in his cabinet or other officials who get in trouble. You know, it's you see how they look on TV before you find out whether he's going to stick by them or ditch them. And so this is like kind of the ultimate metric. Like, you know, the president is always talking about ratings. Well, Elijah Cummings gets great ratings. And so I think that's part of why he in particular is under the president's skin more than some of the other members of Congress, like Gerald Nadler, who heads the Judiciary Committee and is also doing a fair amount of investigation, or Adam Schiff on the Intelligence Committee, another person who's really doing a lot of oversight. I can see why Congressman Cummings has gotten under his skin more than they have, simply because he's so effective at conveying the message.
Yeah, Congressman Cummings, in my experience, really does command attention
yes.
in a room, and it
mm-hmm.
plays well. And President Trump, of course, reinvented himself on television. He
yeah.
understands that medium
precisely
well. Now, one of the things that the president implied in his tweets, or said actually pretty directly, is that he laid blame at Congressman Cummings for the problems
mm-hmm.
in our city, in Baltimore, the you know rats, poverty, crime. Can you break down for me what actually is Congressman Cummings' you know responsibility, or how much can mm-hmm. he fix these you
yeah.
know, problems
so,
we have?
So let's bear in mind, Congressman Cummings is not and never has been the mayor of Baltimore. He's never served on the city council of Baltimore. He was in the House of Delegates in Maryland for 14 years, I believe, before moving on to Congress. And so in those roles, he can do things to help bring resources to the city, although he doesn't have it, you know, in either role, he's not the person writing the checks. He, you know, has to work within the legislative body, and he's been pretty influential in both places he's served. But, you know, again, it's not like being the president. He doesn't have or a governor or a mayor. He doesn't have that kind of direct executive authority. He can do oversight, as he's doing now, to make sure that people are doing their jobs the way they're supposed to do them. But, you know, he is ultimately one member of a legislative body and has been throughout his entire career. He is not a president. He is not a governor. He is not a mayor. And so there are limits to the kind of power he can exercise over any of these things. Now, is Congressman Cummings somehow disconnected from what's going on in his district? Well, ultimately, the people of his district who return him to office overwhelmingly are the judge of that. But, you know, if you look at after the unrest in 2015, who was on the front lines marching on the streets trying to bring calm and peace? It was Elijah Cummings.
As I thought about the cameras, I wondered, did anybody recognize Freddie when he was alive? Did you see him? Did you see him? Did you see him? Did you read this?
He was front and center during those very difficult times, and I think people remember that very distinctly. There are, you know, some really memorable images of him from that night on the streets in the community. You know, he lives in Baltimore City, has for many years, has raised his family here. So I think you'd have a hard time convincing a lot of people in his district that he's somehow aloof or disconnected from what's going on in Baltimore.
And as Congressman Cummings pointed out in the one statement we've gotten from him so far mm-hmm. in his tweet in response to the president, he said, "I go back to my district every night."
Right.
And made a point of saying that, you know, he's not some absentee congressman.
Yes. He has the benefit of living quite close to Washington compared to people from California or what have you. But yeah. So I think it's also a sort of mistake to say, oh, well, Congressman Cummings has been in office for 30 years. Baltimore still has big problems. Well, Baltimore's problems go back quite a bit farther than even the 30 years that Elijah Cummings has been in office one way or another. I mean, the issues that we currently face in terms of inequality in terms of, you know, economic lack of opportunities for people, in terms of, you know, poor outcomes from the school system, and in terms of blight. You know, all of these things really have their roots, you know, a century ago from Baltimore's pioneering efforts at housing segregation. You know, we were the first city in America to pass a legal restriction on housing integration, which the Supreme Court, thankfully, you know, back in the 19-teens, a century ago, struck that down. But the enterprising racists of Baltimore found subtler and more nefarious means in terms of restrictive covenants and redlining and other tactics to try to enforce segregation in the city. And then in later years, you know, unscrupulous real estate investors, and perhaps this may sound familiar to the president, you know, very cynically used racism for their own benefit and gain through the practice of blockbusting, wherein they, you know, would bring a black family into an all-white neighborhood, create a panic among the white homeowners, buy up properties cheap, sell them at inflated profits to new black homeowners, putting everybody at a disadvantage except themselves. That went on for decades and really contributed to the white flight and disinvestment in the city. And you know, practices like those have continued on, you know, through, you know, unscrupulous lending practices. You know, a decade ago, 7 years ago, actually, the city entered into a settlement with Wells Fargo, which had been steering black homeowners into some subprime mortgages. We have a lot of problems with landlords taking advantage of the law to evict tenants, or in the case of the Kushner companies owned by Trump's son-in-law, Jared Kushner, really aggressive use of tactics to try to actually lock people up who are behind on their rent. So those kinds of things continue to this very day.
Yeah, and I think that's something that maybe in the online conversation a lot of people are not aware of, this kind of, as you very well laid out, this history of you know, institutionalized discrimination, and a lot of it goes right back to the federal government, HUD mm-hmm. policies.
Yes, there are actually maps from the 1920s and 30s from the federal government showing you know, that's where the term redlining comes from, is there were actual
right.
government maps of where whites and blacks could be. You know, if anybody really wants to know the story, the foundational text on this is a book written by a former Sun editorial writer, Antero Pietella, called Not in My Neighborhood. So if you want to know how this happened, read that book.
Yeah, I can absolutely agree that book is phenomenal, actually. I believe it should be required reading for anybody who, you know, lives, votes in not only the city of Baltimore, but the suburbs as well, because it talks about some of the problems in Baltimore County. And I spoke with some folks this morning who said that perhaps this is an opportunity to shine a light on the causes of our problems in the city and maybe how we can address them. Do you see that there's a possible silver lining here from all this vitriol?
Well, we'll see. I mean, President Trump has said, hey, come on down to the Oval Office. Here, I'm here to help. So, you know, we've seen Baltimore leaders have tried to appeal to him before. You know, for example, shortly after he was elected, President Trump was in Baltimore for the Army-Navy game, which was here that year. And then newly elected Mayor Catherine Pugh made a point of tracking him down in the concourse of the stadium and handed him a letter asking for his help for Baltimore in several specific ways.
I was the only elected official there, and he walked over to me, and I said, I am the mayor of Baltimore. He said, I know. So we took a picture, and I said, you know, I really need you to pay close attention to the fact that we could be your partner. And then Giuliani walked by. He says, hey, mayor. I said, hey, mayor, I need you to make sure he understands how important this is. And so I gave him the letter, and then I said, and when I'm giving you this pen, this is a Baltimore pen, and every time you look at it, I need you to think of Baltimore.
There are photos of the two of them together. She got a lot of grief from her fellow Democrats about that, but she said, hey, look, I'm going to get help for Baltimore from wherever I can get it. So far as I can tell, nothing ever came of that from the White House end, but, you know, he can't say nobody asked. There's photographic evidence of it. The mayor of Baltimore handed him a specific list of requests. We also have issues like the Department of Housing and Urban Development under Baltimore's very own Ben Carson has really stepped away from the Obama administration efforts to use federal housing policy to foster desegregation, to help break up these concentrations of poverty in Baltimore. In fact, the Obama administration specifically talked about Baltimore when it announced this policy, it was then HUD Secretary Julian Castro, now a Democratic presidential candidate, announced this a few years ago. Ben Carson has completely stepped away from that. The Trump administration has taken steps to try to reduce support for subsidized housing here and across the nation. So there are issues like that where this administration has actively made things worse as opposed to better. But if you look at what could the federal government do for Baltimore, well, first of all, you know, much more enlightened housing policy and much more support for affordable housing would be a tremendous help. Support for infrastructure would be really, really useful.
And on that front, we actually, the congressional delegation did just land a big grant from the federal government for the Howard Street Tunnel to enlarge that tunnel so that trains can go through with two containers stacked on them. Of course, it's not enough to get the whole project done, but
it's one success. It's also one that has, you know, It's important for the region economically. You know, we've been supporters of this project for many years on the editorial board. But, you know, if you were to look at, say, the federal government putting a big investment in helping to repair the water and sewer infrastructure in Baltimore that is crumbling beneath our feet, that recently caused a giant sinkhole to open downtown, you know, that would be a big help. You know, we're every one of us in Baltimore is paying increasingly high rates for water and sewer bills because of the need to comply with an EPA mandate to fix our water and sewer system. You know, the federal government could really take a lot of pressure off of low-income people in the city by coming in and helping to solve those problems that are, you know, a century in the making. You know, certainly we had big problems in the city for people in East and West Baltimore in particular, getting to areas of economic opportunity where they can get jobs.
There could have been a train line could have helped with that.
In fact, there was a train line. In fact, a guy named Elijah Cummings was pretty instrumental in trying to put together the coalition and the funding for the red line that Governor Larry Hogan, who has expressed his outrage at the president's tweets and referred to Baltimore as the heart of the state, that he, Governor Hogan, killed. This project that would have helped connect people in East and West Baltimore to employment centers like the Social Security Administration and Johns Hopkins Bayview. Things like that could definitely help. You know, if the federal government were to actually come forward and support special education in the way that it is supposed to, that would make an enormous difference in Baltimore, where so much of the school budget goes towards addressing the needs of special education students. There are any number of ways that a president who really wanted to could make a difference for a city like Baltimore.
I guess it remains to be seen how much of a difference the president wants to make. Andy, I want to turn to this editorial that your team published this weekend. And,
yes.
And just for clarity, you're the opinions editor. And
yes.
What you and your team write about is different from the news side.
Correct.
And what I write about in news articles.
Yes, we don't coordinate, we don't talk, we don't share ideas or anything.
So this editorial had a headline that was, better to have rats than to be one.
Yeah.
And it was very aggressive. Tell me how that came together with your team, and Peter Jensen was the lead writer on it.
Yeah, you know, when the tweets from the president came out over the weekend, there was some discussion amongst us about whether, do we really need to jump on this right now and say something about it. And I think we felt that, you know, president going after Elijah Cummings is one thing. You know, he is a member of the U.S. Congress. He's a big boy. He can take care of himself, no question. But when you're going after an entire city in the way he did, in a really cynical way, in a way that exploits racial animus, in a way that exploits prejudice, in a way that really, you know, denies the humanity of people who choose to live in Baltimore, of people who, you know, are kind of stuck here, who don't have the means, who may want to move somewhere else but don't have the means to, of people who are really working every day to try to improve conditions in the city. You know, that, I think, struck us all as something that really demanded a response. This White House is a challenge for editorial writers everywhere to figure out how to respond, how much to respond. You know, clearly, as we said earlier, the president feeds off of conflict and feeds off of, you know, being the center of attention in these controversies. And so on the one hand, you don't want to play into that. You don't want to, you know, get down on his level. Sad as it is to say that the president's level is something you'd have to get down to. But, you know, there are times when, frankly, something happens that is so egregious that you have no choice but to respond.
So what kind of feedback have you gotten? I know it's been read. I believe it's shattering all kinds of records on our website. What are folks saying to you about it?
It's, you know, mostly, I would say the feedback we're getting at this point is mostly positive. You know, people are saying, you know, great, good for you, good for standing up to the president for saying what needed to be said. You know, there are other people who have called in who I can't quote on a program that children might listen to. You know, it goes both ways. But so far, the response has been mostly pretty positive.
All right. Well, Andy, thank you again so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
And we'll be right back after this brief message.
Like what you hear? Continue to discover the truth in uncompromising journalism. For a limited time, you can get access to our award-winning coverage for $1 a month for 3 months. Start an unlimited digital subscription today at baltimoresun.com/startnow.
Welcome back to Newsroom Edition. With us now is Wilbur Nobles III, who happened to be working in the Sun newsroom over the weekend and ended up reporting on the Trump-Baltimore Cummings feud. Will, thanks for being here.
Hey, thank you for having me.
So, Will, you're not from Baltimore. You recently moved here to come work for The Sun. But you covered your new town on Saturday, right as the president attacked the city. what was that like when you first saw the tweet come in?
Yeah, Saturday was, for lack of a better word, a wild experience. It was my first Saturday shift with The Sun. I was really excited and eager to come out here and just to do the good work that y'all have been doing for years on end. And my editor just said, hey, the president is tweeting about the city and about Elijah Cummings. So let's take a dig into this and see what's going on. And it wasn't that long before, you know, the entire city and even folks across the nation really had this strong reaction to what a lot of people claimed were racist comments from the president with regard to, you know, calling the city rodent infested and what have you.
Yeah, it seemed to me watching that Baltimore Twitter and Maryland Twitter was just straight on fire on Saturday after this came out.
Yeah, I mean, coming from New Orleans, I'm no stranger to political controversy. But one thing I think Baltimore and New Orleans have in common is when you try to come for the city comes back at you, right? And I really had the opportunity to see that firsthand. You know, while, of course, I was behind the desk and on my computer, but just seeing all these tweets come up and seeing all of these people react, especially in emails, whether they were for or against the president's comments, it goes without saying, like, folks take the reputation Baltimore has seriously.
Yeah, quite an introduction to the city to see that firsthand. We kind of have little bit of a chip on our shoulder here, and we're defensive. But when you come after our town, people really stand up for the city.
Yeah.
So I imagine that since you were the first reporter on this and first byline, you've gotten a lot of feedback. What kind of, you know, positive and negative things have you heard from readers?
Yeah. And I touched on this a little bit online after I finally left the office at like 7 p.m. I started work around 8 a.m. So it was a long day.
That is a long day.
and you know, the emails ranged from different responses, as you would imagine. One person said I was the poison that pollutes honest journalism.
And that's
me like roughly paraphrasing what he said, minus him saying like poison. So that was interesting. And then other people just said they thanked us for the work we were doing. They thanked me for taking the time out of my weekend to report on the president's comments and his feelings about the city. One person emailed me just a few minutes ago before we started this interview and just said, you know, because you ran out of your office and reported on everything happening in the city and what Trump is saying, I decided to subscribe because of you and because of your work. And I mean, that's an amazing thing. That's what we want people to do. We want people to support local journalism because we really are the watchdogs for the community, and we want to make sure that the issues that are happening around us are represented accurately and fairly.
Yeah, that's probably about the best response you could probably get is somebody saying, I decided to subscribe because I like the work that you're doing. That's pretty awesome. Now, Will, when you're not covering breaking news, your beat is Baltimore County government, and you spoke with Baltimore County Executive Johnny Olszewski Jr. today about Trump's tweets. What did he tell you?
Yeah, Johnny has pointed out that it's really, in his words, ironic that the president would bring up issues within the county and within the region overall, calling these places a rodent-infested mess when his son-in-law, Jared Kushner, has had ownership in companies across the region that, in Johnny's words, have had significant livability and quality of life concerns. Specifically, he pointed out that since 2017, the county has flagged the Kushner properties for having more than 200 violations. He stressed to me today that, in particular, there are 9 properties where the county did indeed charge significant fines in addition to actually withholding rental assistance payments from these companies. So, and Johnny really stressed to me. He said, you know, you're talking about a company that was using local taxpayer dollars to help subsidize these apartments. And he said they were frankly in conditions that, you know, he as a father would never raise his daughter or his family in. So, you know, in Johnny's words, there's an irony in having the president attack a city for conditions that his own son-in-law directly and indirectly contributed towards. So it's weird. It's kind of the pot calling the kettle black, as they say.
Well, Will, thank you so much for joining us. For listeners who want to follow your work covering Baltimore County, where can they find you?
So I'm always sharing the news that I put out as well as the news that you and my other colleagues are putting out at my Twitter account, which is Will Nobles, WILNOBLES. That's my Twitter account. So feel free to follow me there and see the good work we're doing.
All right. Well, thanks again, Will. We really appreciate it.
Thank you.
And that's this week's Newsroom Edition. Thank you for joining us. For more audio from the Baltimore Sun, please check us out at baltimoresun.com/roughlyspeaking or wherever you get your podcasts. And as we say each week, as times change, the need for quality journalism doesn't. So please consider subscribing to the Baltimore Sun at baltimoresun.com/subscribe. For producers Hallie Miller and Steve Early, thanks again, and we'll see you next time.